everyone. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast. This is the show where we focus exclusively on buy and hold real estate. So we don't talk about wholesaling. We don't talk about lease options. We don't talk about flipping houses. We talk about specifically buy and hold rental real estate in order to create legacy wealth for you and your family. That's what it's all about. And today I'm back with another case study episode. I'm really excited to have my guest on the show today. He really just started investing just a few short months ago. Took the plunge. He is a lawyer by trade, so I think he spends 18 hours a day in a courtroom, but realized, you know what, I wanted to start creating legacy wealth for my family, and I'm thrilled to have on the show today Dan Barley, new real estate investor. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Clayton. How are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for doing this.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So give our audience a little background. I mentioned a little bit about you, you know, spending a lot of time in court, yeah. But you're in law practice. So how did you, first of all, how did you get into that? And then how did you decide to take the plunge into real estate?
Sure. Well, I decided to go to law school. It's always been a passion of mine. I enjoy the law. But of course, with that came a tremendous amount of student loan debt. And as you said, 18-hour days are not uncommon. 7 days a week is not uncommon. As I started to build and develop my practice, I realized that I needed to develop a passive income stream. And I've always been fascinated by real estate. Most of what I do as an attorney is real estate based. So I decided that it was time for me to, as you say, build legacy wealth for my family and make sure that we were secured in our future.
So you started diving into looking at, you know, okay, you had saved up some money. You probably had some money set aside, some savings set aside. You thought, okay, was the idea that, you know, I want to get this money to start to work for me instead of just sitting in an account?
Yes, absolutely. As we know, savings are irrelevant as far as your return on your investment. And as I started poking around in real estate investing, I learned about turnkey real estate investing. And my passion was always buy and hold. I always wanted to have, you know, a portfolio of properties that could provide a lifestyle for me. And then I, you know, over the past year and a half, I really, you know, evaluated some markets and some companies. And, you know, once I got started and actually bought my first property, I think it was December, I haven't looked back and I just continue to buy what I can.
So when you first started and you began to investigate and think about buy and hold, you were looking at different markets. Now you're in New Jersey, right?
Yes, I actually live in northern New Jersey, just out of New York City, where the prices are astronomical and you cannot really do too much out here.
So I guess that probably is where you started looking, right? You probably started looking in your own backyard, I would think.
Yes, I did. I looked around here, and I know you're also in North Jersey, and the prices and the rate of return you can get, and I think even the risk is so much greater in New Jersey that I started to look at outside markets.
And when you started looking at outside markets and started to dive in, what was your criteria? Where did you... You know, when you, this is, I think, a big hurdle for a lot of new investors. They're sitting down and they're just sort of frustrated because they don't know where to turn. You know, they hear different stories. They think about different numbers. They're not sure if it's an ROI number they should be focused on. They're not sure. So how, when you first started this journey, what were you, was it all over the place? Was it kind of a mess?
I would say in the beginning, because you're starting to learn about all these different concepts. And the, like you said, the biggest hurdle, I think, for people is to wrap their head around investing out of their own backyard, where they're not able to physically go every single day to the property and see it and touch it and delegating to a management team and so on. So actually, I know you just had Brandon Turner on your show not too long ago as well. I found Bigger Pockets. I started poking around through there. I learned a lot about different turnkey providers and started interviewing different companies and see who I got a good feel with and started building relationships. And from there, I identified which markets I was, you know, most fond of and, you know, the providers I worked best with.
And I think you and I met then, I think it was maybe November or December.
Yeah,
of 2015. And you had told me, I think, that you downloaded my Freedom Cheat Sheet and started going through that. What, you know, tell us about that experience. I'd love to hear what you, you know, and you did with your family.
Absolutely. That was really kind of mind blowing because you, when you think, you know, you want to achieve financial freedom, which is a big goal for everybody. You probably, I think new investors have this concept of you're going to need this massive portfolio that it almost might seem unattainable. So it causes a lot of negativity and doubt for people. But when I listened to your podcast on Bigger Pockets, actually, too, and you talked about your cheat sheet, it ended up being that, you know, you can backtrack it and plug into how many houses do you need in other markets that can generate, you know, whether it's 600, 500, 700 a month to really achieve your number. And that number was so much smaller than I initially thought of it as an abstract concept. And once I sat down with my wife and I talked about it with her, she was like, wow, that sounds amazing. Let's move forward. And then you and I met, and as they say, the rest is history.
And what was that number? And so for our audience, if you haven't downloaded the cheat sheet yet, we'll have it available in the show notes page for this episode. Just go to morrisinvest.com/podcast. It's right there. You can download it. It's free. It's like 3 pages. And the idea is, to Dan's point, is, you know, you don't need to be a millionaire. I mean, most people throw out this idea that, oh, I want to be a millionaire. That's what I want. That's an arbitrary number. But really, when you break it down, it's the idea that, well, what is the number that will give us financial freedom enough that it covers our monthly expenses? And so we sort of reverse engineer it from there. And then how many rental properties will it take to cover those monthly expenses? And then what, you know, what number of rental properties is that? And that number is our freedom number. So for me, you know, it might be 17 houses. And Dan, I think when you first called, you said, I wanted to get to 15 houses. Is that right?
I think that was probably my first goal, was 15 houses would be my first, like, ultimate goal, and then proceed to the next level from there as well.
So when we met in December,
it was definitely much less than we thought.
Right. I know, it's crazy because we think, oh, we've got to have 100 houses to be financially free. No, yeah. Not at all.
Right.
And when we first, I think, just started talking in November or December, then you had zero rental properties at that point, right?
Correct.
And now how many do you have?
Now I actually have 5. So it's been an amazing adventure, and we just closed yesterday on another one with you.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so we just closed yesterday. So tell us about that property, and I want to go backwards here, but in a moment, but we just mentioned it, so let's just mention it now. So tell us about that property that we closed yesterday, and I think we actually start construction on it tomorrow, right?
Yes, absolutely. So as we've gotten to know each other better, and I've grown very comfortable with you, I now have 3 units with Morris Invest. So it's been a great experience, and I wanted to acquire more. And I asked you, Clayton, do you have any duplexes? And you had one duplex that needed some rehab, nothing crazy. And you gave me the opportunity that I went in and I bought it. I'm paying for I believe it was $38,000 for the house. The rehab's just around $10,000 or so, and then it's gonna cash flow. I think the 2 units are about $600 each or so. So the numbers really made sense, and it was a great move. So we just closed on that yesterday. And like you said, I think the construction's starting tomorrow, and I think it's about 4 to 5 weeks or so.
Yeah, because it's a little bit of a larger duplex, so just the square footage size just might, you know, take us a little bit longer. But yeah, that's great. So your third property with us, that's great. So hitting that 15, you only got 10 to go. And what's amazing to me is you just started in December. So,
right.
You know, for people who think, oh, this is going to, I literally spoke to an investor this afternoon who thought it was going to take them, you know, 15 years to get to their number. I think their number was 12 or 13. And I just stopped them in their tracks. I said, no. No, we've got to start thinking outside the box. And that's what you've started to do. You've started to think outside the box, obviously with some financing, dealing with banks can be a bit of a pain, as you know. But trying to go through now and begin to think about leveraging some of the properties you already have. So take us through that process. Where is your head now about it? You want to sort of snowball the investments you currently have and take things to the next level.
I absolutely do. I mean, I'm looking to try to speak to some portfolio lenders who might be able to do a blanket loan. I actually refinanced my building so I can use that equity and put it to work for me and use it to buy these properties. So thankfully I was in a position to be able to do that. And that's really going to be the catalyst for me to get to my 15 unit number that I really wanted to hit.
That's great. That's great. So now I'm just curious I know, because we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, obviously, as a lawyer and as a real estate investor, there are a lot of people who are just starting out, figuring out the sort of the structures of their business, how best to protect themselves, in their mm-hmm. investments. I'm sure you're, as a lawyer, and I mean, I don't want to make any assumptions, but I'm sure you're just cautious by nature. You know, you're around the law all the time. What kind of law do you practice, by the way?
Mostly real estate. So I do mostly transactional closings. And then, you know, I dabble a little bit in other areas as well, but most of my practice is real estate driven.
Great. So For our audience trying to figure out how best to protect themselves, either with buy and hold investments or even fix and flips, you know, what are some of the things that they need to take into account when they're setting up their business or they're about to dive into this? What are some of the things you want to look out for?
Sure. Well, of course, you know, everyone has this vision of not having anything in your personal name. Single member LLCs are very easy to create and set up. But again, I would highly recommend that that's done through an attorney. You know, like if the property's in Indianapolis, not, you know, hard to find an Indianapolis attorney that can help you set that up properly. And then, you know, managing it, whether it's, you know, making sure everything's separate. So you have a separate bank account for your LLC, making sure everything gets done through that account. And you just want to keep an accurate set of books for everything. So you don't want to be caught, you know, whether it's commingling funds with multiple accounts that are in your name and some in that name. You want to keep everything separate because it is a separate business.
And do you recommend hiring a bookkeeper?
I do, absolutely. I have an accountant, a bookkeeper that has done, you know, everything for me for several years, and I keep everything separate, and I, you know, provide him all the documentation and manage that.
So that's really important. So I want to kind of go over this again, making sure a single member LLC for your business. Now, do you recommend having a single member LLC for sort of like an umbrella over your overall business and then individual properties being in a separate LLC?
That's probably my next step, to be honest, Clayton. I have one LLC per house. So I have each house under a different LLC for liability protection purposes. And then I might end up having one master LLC and make those each subsidiaries of it.
And we're going to have Tom Wheelwright on the podcast here in a few weeks. He's going to be on at the end of June. We're really excited because Tom Wheelwright is Robert Kiyosaki's tax accountant, rich dad, poor dad. He is probably the number one tax accountant for real estate in the country. Full disclosure, yeah, he is now our accountant because we wanted to hire the best. So, we're going to dive a little even deeper into, you know, the tax structures. Obviously, Dan on the legal side and the liability side, we're going to dive into like the tax structures and talk about different states and where best to, you know, set up your LLCs and so forth. So the combination of, and anytime you talk to a good tax accountant, when we talk to them, they're always telling us, make sure you talk to an attorney. Talk to an attorney to make sure that your things are set up properly and that you have the proper liability you know, in place for those sorts of things. And as you know, it's really important to know if your home state is good and protective, right? I mean, for instance, Wyoming is a great state to set up an LLC because of the liability protection. Do you recommend people sort of examine their own state first and talk to a local attorney?
I do. I think also it might be best to talk to an attorney where the property you're going to buy is located. Because obviously that's where the piece of real estate is going to physically be. So you want to make sure that that attorney explains to you what, you know, what rights you have, where you're going to be protected the most, and what structure might be best for you. It may not be a single member LLC based on where you're buying.
Okay. So
I would absolutely recommend you seek out professional advice. Like you said, you want to get the best advisors on your team, whether it's your accountant, your attorney, your insurance broker. These people are all worth their weight in gold. They're supposed to help you, and they end up saving you money in the long run.
Right. Hire the best, work with the best, and it's going to end up coming back. Even if you spend a little bit more, right, you know, right, I mean, to work with like Tom's company, for instance, we spent a little bit more to be a part of that team. But holy smokes, we had a call today, an hour-long call with this team, and it is mind-blowing how great they are. You know, so you want to make sure you're really, you know, paying for the best, and it's going to come back and help you. I want to talk about the liability aspect of this. One of the questions I get from new investors all the time is, well, what are the risks? You know, what are the risks legally of acquiring rental real estate? To your mind as a lawyer, what do you see? What should new investors be concerned with and not fearful of where they don't take action? But what are the things that they need to think through and just protect themselves?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. Is like you said, that it becomes a fear that holds them back. Just like no matter where you own, if you were to decide to be a real estate investor and you're going to own a property, even if it's next door to you, everyone has this, I guess, fear that something's going to go wrong with the tenant. Is the tenant going to tear up the place? Am I going to have to get a call at night? And so on and so forth. But we use, you know, with your company, we have a management company in place that's going to handle all of that. So that's, I felt a lot more, you know, protected and safer knowing that I had a professional management team that was going to handle that aspect of it so I can rest easier at night.
That's great. Now, as far as like your insurance structure too, as a lawyer, did you get sort of extra protection from your insurance? Do you, I mean, you can talk about the three properties that we, you know, that we did together. Sure. Did you add on a whole, I mean, I guess I just have this perception, right? As a lawyer, like, man, Dan must be just piling on the liability coverage. He must just be, you know, protected out the nines. Am I totally wrong?
I don't think I'm more protected, quote unquote, than anybody else would be. I do. I have a tremendous amount of protection for my law practice, to be honest. That's where I'm more protected probably than others might be. I have, you know, there's all kinds of insurances and malpractice insurance and cyber liability and so on and so forth. Whereas with the properties, I get a standard policy. I up my personal limits. I think I do like 500,000 regular liability limit. And then I also maintain a personal umbrella policy, which covers everything outside of my individual policies for the property. But again, I would rather be well protected, even if it means spending a little more money, but sleeping better at night.
That's great. Okay. So an umbrella policy that you would set up, and you could set that up in your own home state, right? It doesn't have to be where the property is located, correct?
Right. That's absolutely right.
And then for your individual properties, you've upped the personal liability to about 500,000.
The standard is 300,000, but I wanted a little more protection, like you said, because of my cautious nature.
Right. And then overall, so liability at 500,000, what about structure? So what happens if the tenant sets the, you know, you bought the property for 38,000, you got coverage that covers it for like what, 55,000? So
it's between 50 and 55,000. So like you said, God forbid a tenant destroys the place completely and burns the house down, I'm actually going to come out ahead of the game because I'm going to get 55,000 from the insurance company.
Right, and you paid 48 all in for the property. Right. Yeah. So you would get a check for 55 on a property you paid 48 for. Brandon Turner on the show, as you mentioned, Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets, he talked about his one problem that he had with a rental, you know, and the tenant put a box on the burner and burned his rental place. But he ended up getting, you know, like, I think, whatever, I don't remember the price, but he ended up getting more from the insurance.
Right.
Good. So I want to go back a little bit because you talked about some of the fear stuff that people may come in contact with. And I would have to think, you know, even as a lawyer, maybe even you would even be more cautious, but I'm impressed with you because you really took action. Like, were you ever 100% sure that you were ready to take action?
Well, as I know that you're a fan of saying, you're never 100% sure about anything really in your life.
Right.
And I know you use the wedding analogy, I know, which is a funny one. But it's really about doing your research and being as comfortable as you're going to be. You know, I had, like I said, I had a meeting with you. We had coffee that time. And then we've talked on the phone and we've exchanged numerous emails. And the more I found out, the more comfortable I was and the more everything seemed to be in line with what I thought and what I expected and what was provided. And then the first property, of course, was kind of like, you know, it proved it. And then as the first property continued and things were good, I got even more confident and comfortable with you guys, to the point where I said, hey, Clayton, let's go for number two. And now let's go for number three. And I imagine within the next month, I'm going to ask you for another one.
That's fantastic. That's great. And so that idea of being held back by fear, you know, if you just take action, you just move a little bit, just take action, take that first step and do your due diligence and know what you're comfortable with in order to, you know, you have to put your faith in people at some point. As long as your bases are covered, right. You've got the proper liability coverage. You've done your due diligence, you've done your research, you've had the right conversations and you've gotten your questions answered, then what else is left, right?
Right. Then it's just a matter of pulling the trigger and moving forward.
That's great. So when you look at your overall goals over the next 5 years, I want you to put your sort of future goggles on here because you've got five properties now. Now you are in the driver's seat. Now it's like a beeline to number 10 and then number 15. Where do you see yourself going in the next 5 years and how do you think you'll get there?
Oh, that is a great question. My personal goal, like I said, was 15 units by the end of this calendar year, which is December 31st. And then my goal is next year to acquire a minimum of 10 more. Using the money again, I'm compounding it, which I actually learned from Brandon as well. If I don't touch the rent and I let that accumulate, I can leverage that money, the rental income that I've gotten, as down payments on the next set of properties. So that's my plan, is to continue to, because I still make decent money as an attorney, so I still use that to live on, and we maintain our lifestyle. And the passive income that I'm getting through the rental real estate, I'm letting that compound every month to the point where I have enough for the next down payment, and using that for my next property and my next property. And now it's really going to be identifying portfolio lenders that can do a bundle, and then trying to move forward that way. So instead of closing one at a time, I can try to close four or five at a time.
That's great. That's wonderful. And so those portfolio lenders, I mean, that's the next step. And we're going to have, you know, we've been talking about private money here on the show. We've had, of course, yesterday on the show, we had Jeff House, who is a private money expert. Of course, this episode right before Dan's episode. And Jeff House, you know, really, we went deep into private money and getting portfolio loans and how to leverage private financing. We're going to have a lot more episodes here on the podcast where we really dive into the strategies around, like, where Dan is in taking those five properties and turning it into 10 and then turning it into 15 and using that compounding factor to really snowball your investments. They always say, you know, getting the first one is the hardest, right? I say getting the second one is the hardest, because you've got that first one. That was hard enough, but getting that second one, now you've got two, maybe you've got two free and clear. Now, how do you get to four? Because to me, in my mind, two gets four, four gets eight, eight gets 16, and you can really roll it in that direction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the plan.
That's the plan. I love it. So
that's my next conversation with you, is to how to change these that we have now to leverage it into the next dozen or so properties and so on and so forth.
That's great. And so looking at your overall rent, I want to kind of just give people a frame of reference on numbers. So since December on these five properties, how much have you been able to, like, put away compounding where you haven't even really been touching this rent roll?
Let's see. The first property we did is a rent of $590, I believe. So, I mean, I'm taking back, I think, $510 on that a month. And then the second one is also about the same numbers. And now the other one that I closed before also was another like $600. So right now, every month, I woke up last May, and on May 23rd, and I had $1,800 in my account. So right now, I think I have about $3,500 in rent from since December to now that I can use to leverage on another property.
That's great. That's how it happens, folks. I love it. I love it, Dan. So for any new investors out there, I always loved on these episodes particularly, obviously, you're just a few months deep into this now, about 6 months. 6 months deep into rental real estate and you own five units. What advice would you give to someone who's thinking about taking that plunge, or they're trying to get their wife or their husband to listen to podcasts and they're kind of nudging them? Because trust me, I hear from investors all the time. They're like, you know what? My wife's sick of me telling her about this, but I want her to listen to this podcast, or I want her to read this book and she won't do it, or now she's kind of coming around. What would you say to those people who are kind of hemming and hawing about things?
I would say that you do have to have your spouse's approval. I know you and Natalie work together closely and very well. My wife is a big supporter, but I think it's very important to have your spouse's support. So I would just keep plugging away at it. Show numbers. Numbers don't lie. So when I sat down and I showed my wife, hey, we're going to put down this and we're going to take home this every month, she was like, wow, that makes sense. Let's move forward. I trust you. Go ahead. And then it's a matter of, again, once you do your due diligence and you've gotten that security as much as you're going to get, never the 100%, but as much as you can get, then it's a matter of taking action, pulling the trigger, and moving forward and trusting yourself.
That's great. I love it. Before we go, any books, any bit, you know, pieces of advice that people can take on their summer vacation that you've read that kind of helped you wrap your heads around, rental real estate and buy and hold investing?
Sure. Well, the book that started it all, it's very common, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I actually just read Second Chance by Robert Kiyosaki as well. I think I flew through that in one day, and I read the whole thing cover to cover. I think those books are excellent. I think they give you a great foundational piece, and then you can leverage that and move it forward. Sky's the limit from there.
That's great. Dan Barley, everyone. If people want to get in contact with you, and hey, any portfolio lenders want to reach out to you, is there, and you can say absolutely not, don't want to give out my email address. We can include it in the show notes page if you have sort of a professional email that anyone wants to reach out and seek advice from you, or reach out and hey, offer you a portfolio loan on properties.
I am always more than happy to speak to anybody and offer my advice and my help and guidance however I can. I believe that it's our job, it's all of our jobs to give back and try to help everybody else. So my personal email is barleydan@gmail.com. That's B as in boy, ARLIDAN@gmail.com. And I know you have that, so feel free to please link it in the show notes. And if there's anything I can do to help anybody, I am much more than happy to do so.
Wonderful. That will be on morrisinvest.com/podcast. Just go to this episode. This is episode 14 of the Investing in Real Estate podcast, and go down, scroll down. We'll have links to the books that Dan just mentioned, as well as Dan's email address if you'd like to get in contact with him. Hey, if you need legal advice too. What the heck? Dan, it's been a great pleasure working with you and helping you get to those five properties. And it's been great having you here on the podcast as well.
Thank you so much, Clayton. I appreciate it. And I look forward to doing a lot more together.
Awesome. That is Dan Barley, everyone. He just started real estate investing in December of 2015. So you can take action from his story. I loved hearing that as well. So thank you so much for downloading this podcast. Once again, head over to morrisinvest.com/podcast. That is the page that has all of this information. We publish every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We're going to be back here next week with some great episodes on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And you don't want to miss, at the end of the month, we're going to be speaking to Tom Wheelwright. That is Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad's, a personal tax accountant. And the guy is a walking tax genius. This guy is amazing. He makes the IRS quiver in its boots. We'll talk to him and how to really structure our businesses for really saving on our taxes. That's coming up in a few short weeks. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your June, and we'll see you back here next time, everyone. Thanks.